Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I am your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 7, Penetration Testing with Virtual Backups. Here we go. Today I'm really lucky. I've got two guests, Edward Halecki and Tim Pearson. How you doing, guys?
Hey there,
it's great.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm good. So everybody knows Edward. He's TechSciWill on Twitter and VMware Communities and author of a number of security books. Edward, why don't you tell everybody about yourself?
Well, actually, only one security book. It's the VMware vSphere and Virtual Infrastructure Security. And Tim actually was a contributing author on that book. He wrote our penetration testing chapter, which is very appropriate to this conversation. I do have a new book coming out very soon. It will be VMware ESX and ESXi in the Enterprise, Planning Your Virtual Environment. And that should be out anytime now. Original version, this VMware ESX and ESXi in the Enterprise is actually the second edition to VMware ESX Server in the Enterprise. VMware ESX Server in the Enterprise, its subtitle was Secure Planning and Securing Your Virtual Environment.
That's it. Okay.
So, yeah, there is two, but I concentrate only on the vSphere one right now because I took all the information from that one and put it into the bigger book.
Cool. And Tim, so tell us a little bit about yourself. You're like a Twitter stalker, you said. Other than that, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been an instructor for about 25 years. I love to teach all of the different technologies. And a technical trainer, I won the Instructor of the Year from EC Council last year. That was delivered at their Hacker Halton conference, and I deliver at all of the conferences all over the world.
Oh, cool!
Gosh, I was in Singapore, I was in Kuala Lumpur, I was in Miami, I was in Sri Lanka, just the different places. And this is just kind of my passion.
Cool.
You know, to see if I can break in to something that somebody that thinks it's safe.
Oh, there,
actually,
cool. Oh,
Tim and I worked together on quite a few things, and we taught a secure coding class together a few times in Europe, which was really interesting. We surprised a bank with some ideas.
Well, and that's really relevant to what we're going to talk about, because we had a financial services organization give us an idea from one of our systems engineers of a way to use vPower's Sure Backup capability. Let me take just a minute and explain what that is. With vPower, one of the categories of functionality is something called Sure Backup. Sure Backup will take your virtual machine backup. In the case of Veeam, it's effectively a snapshot-based backup of the virtual machine in a running crash-consistent state. And then that backup, we're capable of powering that on a special data store, NFS data store, that's provisioned to the host, to an ESXi host, a single host, for either automated testing of your backup file or an on-demand sandbox capacity. And those virtual machines, when they're powered up, they have the opportunity, or they're configured to be behind a network proxy appliance, effectively a Linux firewall that just boots up with a running config of traffic in, traffic out. Actually, traffic in only. Let me correct that. Only traffic in. There's no traffic out. So that capability... We had a customer say, that's a great environment for me to do my penetration testing on the backup of XYZ multi-tier application. So we were talking a little bit about that, and I couldn't think of two better people to come on and talk about that. So guys, just generally, what do you think of that?
We basically had this idea, and as a matter of fact, I had talked to some other vendors about getting some of their technology to demonstrate it, and one thing led to another, and I just never did do it. Basically, what the concept is if you go up to a systems administrator and ask the systems administrator, I'm going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at your DMZ. Most systems administrators, their machines kind of like their kids. You know, they want to try and protect them. They want to, okay, what are you going to do? Well, when was the last time the hacker told you what he's going to do? Well, I don't know. I'm just going to throw everything I can. I don't think so.
A lot of sysadmins and security people won't let you, even if you're doing white hat penetration testing or red team or blue team or whatever it is, they will not allow you to run the destructive tests at all.
Exactly. And
there's so many of them. I mean, there's so many destructive tests because you're running in a live environment. So the concept of running an Assure backup off your NFS server is a great idea.
Now, Edward,
Tim and I actually put this together about, started thinking about this 2005, 2006 time frame when ESX 2.5 was around, and we're thinking about using P2V tools to do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you have two problems with the approach that Sure Backup takes that I can see right off just thinking about Sure Backup and how it works and the fact that it's using an NFS server. First is you're using a firewall. You don't want to have it firewalled. You want it actually on a NetMix segment that doesn't go anywhere. No firewalls, no switches, just the host and nothing else.
So
as soon as a firewall, you're going to end up penetration testing through it.
So in VMware talk, let's kind of tweak the practice a little bit. So let's take that Sure Backup VM. Let's disconnect it from that port group that is behind the firewall. Let's put our penetration mechanism somehow on there. If it's virtual, great. If it needs to be hardwired on a physical port segment, then we get the host on that. So we take that as kind of avoiding that firewall, either virtual to virtual or physical to virtual through the physical infrastructure.
Well, you would do is there's a couple different approaches here, and that is that what are you wanting to penetration test?
Well, that's the proverbial, it depends.
It actually doesn't.
Let me get back to what I was saying earlier to the systems administrator. When you're asking him these questions, wanting him to know what you're going to do, he's not going to basically give you permission to do anything that you want. Well, what if I took a copy of your entire DMZ and replicated it exactly as it was? Well, knock yourself out. Let me know what happened.
Right.
Then when you find the thing that it did hiccup on, you can, with permission by the systems administrator, try just that thing. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. Is it close to perfect? It's about as close as you're going to get.
So remember, the attackers, when you do penetration testing, you're not actually penetration testing from within your own network. You're actually penetration testing the entire bastion level of security. In what we're talking about, you're talking about the DMZ, the firewall to the DMZ, the VMs or the physical hosts within the DMZ, the firewall to the back-end network, if there is one. You're testing all the way through those layers, so just restoring the one application doesn't help us. We need all those other pieces together. So putting it in VMware speak, if I have vShield Edge, right, acting as the firewall to my DMZ. I then have DMZ VMs, and I'm running vShield app within that and vShield endpoint on top of all my VMs. Now I actually have, and then another vShield edge to give me my internal network, right? If I'm layering things like that, doing what you're talking about with Sure Backup, perfect, because I just restore it all, put it on a totally separate set of what I call, in some of the stuff I've been talking about lately, is basically a secure cluster of ESX hosts. That once you put the stuff in there, I mean, I'm not talking about using the NFS, because NFS, there's a bunch of attacks that are timing attacks, and if you're running 100 VMs, your NFS server may crater.
Yeah, true.
So you restore it to a security location, then you basically cut the wires.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you cut the wires to the outside world, you bring in your attack tools like you would normally do it, which is you would go off and do – I mean, what are the steps, Tim, to penetration test?
You basically do all of the things you do, your port scan, your banner grab, your penetration, you know, all of the things you would normally do to try and get in, fuzzing tools, which is usually the most destructive, which will usually cause the thing to hiccup. Basically, you're going to – you have permission now. You have carte blanche access to throw everything you want to at it because you want it to fail.
Right.
Because when it fails, you can try and replicate that back on the physical environment with permission. That's the beautiful takeaway on this.
Yeah, not only that, the key thing here is that you're not just – a lot of these penetration tools don't just attack a single app. Like, I mean, they'll do side channel attacks. They may attack DHCP. They may attack DNS. They may attack AD and eventually get to the app. So there's a lot of attacks that aren't just let's pound on the app. Right. No. Let's pound on a part of the app or something.
Yes, that's true.
So just restoring the app, its middle tier, its middleware, and its database, and attacking them, you're attacking the type of security you're testing is really what a developer wants to test.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, did the code get developed properly? Was the security stance of that set of VMs set up properly? But you're not really doing a full penetration test. You're only doing a part of it.
So,
because everything's interrelated.
Right, so you need
a... why do you say you're not doing a full penetration test? Because it's not in a production environment?
No, it's because, for example, Tim and I talk about attacking ESX all the time, which becomes a part of your penetration test. So if I'm restoring the VMs and just attacking the VMs and ignore ESX, well, I'll guarantee you no hacker's going to do that.
And vCenter, for that matter.
Because it's much bigger.
And not only that, you need to worry about, side channel attacks. You got to worry about, if I attack DNS, did that just suddenly let me into the app because the app was responding to it incorrectly? Mm-hmm. What about your certificate server? Are you doing revocation list lookup? What happens if you can't reach the CRL? All these things become part of the penetration test.
So it's not just one VM, it's the entire infrastructure, ESX, vCenter, on that, and then your Active Directory and your Windows apps, web database, app server, all that stuff, the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing, and what you're talking about with single apps, yes, it's vital to do that, mm-hmm. absolutely. But I look at that as more of a developer view of the world. It's a very narrow scope, and that's right. It's actually not what the hackers are going to look at.
True. So to make, an example of doing penetration testing on Sure Backup, you'd really need that full slice. And if you have the capacity for a secure cluster so that you could attack ESX, assuming that it's configured exactly the same as the production environment, then, that's just one step closer to being as fully representative as possible for that function. Okay. Would you guys at least agree on that?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Cool.
So any security lab that does this is going to want to duplicate your networking.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to want to all the multiple physical layers of physical switching. And if you're using Blade, you've got the physical virtual network. They're going to want to duplicate that as it is.
Right.
Then they're going to want to duplicate the ESX host or ESXi host. And then they're going to want to put the VMs in the right place and inside there and the distributed virtual switching and everything. The vast majority of penetration tests today are over the network, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And basically, even if you're wanting to penetrate Cisco devices, there's a technology called GNS3 where you can actually virtualize it and put it onto a machine, okay, and run the actual iOS that Cisco is running in that environment. I mean, you can replicate it right down to exactly what you have.
In the multiple layers.
And
the appropriate uplinks.
Well, hey, Edward, what was the second thing you saw as a problem with the idea?
Well, the other thing I saw as NFS is if you're going to restore a full environment, one or two, three VMs, I don't see a problem. But if you're restoring 100, 1,000 using your NFS server, I think that's just going to crush it.
Well, I don't think 100 or 1,000 is kind of within the use case of Sure Backup or vPower. I really don't think it is.
I was thinking more on the lines of a DMZ. Is how I had, envisioned.
Or some logical unit of work, right.
Exactly.
Maybe pick a number, 20 VMs.
Department or whatever.
Yeah.
And replicate it as close as you can without them having to attack the real physical environment. You're home free, and your systems administrator is going to love you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never, when you're doing these types of, not so much your day-to-day scan, but anything that's more involved, like the white hat test that you mentioned, you don't actually know if there's a problem until you actually try to inject some bad data. Is that right?
Exactly.
So
the other thing is that you don't want it tied to your backup server in any way. As I said, you want to restore it to a secure lab and then cut the wires.
In VeeamTalk, you probably want multiple, you'd have to, to really take it to the ultimate level, we'd have to do additional separation at the backup server level.
You would have to replicate
a separate backup server using the backup file from the first server.
How about if you just unplug the wire?
Well, if you're using your backup server, the thing running NFS, Tim, has to be available to the ESX host, which means it's on physically on the network.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about still being on the same, being shared by the same one. Okay, I was actually talking about a complete replicated environment. But
that would do it too as well, Tim. But you know, the use case I kind of had in my head was that people don't have to provision additional storage by using the Sure Backup, because we're running from the backup file that's already on disk. The only additional storage is effectively the running config. You know, the page file that gets created on the VMs and whatever gets added additionally. You know, we don't have to do like a bulk clone of all these VMs, which is a huge amount of storage.
Like a link clone.
From the backup, yeah, you could call it that. Yeah.
Okay. But not only that, that means that Veeam Sure Backup vPower becomes in scope for such a test.
Well, you know what? Exactly. If it's protecting stuff already, it in most situations it would already be in scope. If it stores, transmits, or processes this stuff, it's already there in a sense. Mm-hmm. Well, hey guys, so you know we got a lot of details here for people to think about, you know, and there's no blanket recommendation, but Tim and Ed have done a great job of giving us things to think about to, you know, pretty much to carve up an environment that will provide you, you know, an incrementally more representative platform or, you know, secure cluster or secure environment using a couple of different technologies for things like penetration testing. I wouldn't say this is all necessary for everyday scanning, because just general purpose scanning, I would say you would just go on the live environment as is, because that's not really that obtrusive, unless you think differently.
Tim, you know some scanners that are pretty nasty.
Scanners that will be very detrimental. Mm. I would do everything on the replicated environment.
Yep.
I mean, it just depends on how nervous, I guess, your systems administrator is.
That's true. Or how sensitive the environments are, you know.
Yeah, there's scanners that will take down whole networks, so...
That's true.
You want to be careful what you're running anywhere.
Right, right.
I mean, as Tim said, it really depends on how risk-averse your admins are.
When you do a port scan to do a sync ACK and don't respond with the ACK, and you do it more than, you know, on all 65,000 ports, you basically brought down that machine.
Yeah.
See, so it's possible to do a port scan and cause damage. See what I mean?
Oh,
because he has no ports to give up.
Well, not only that, what about if a server doesn't respond to a scan well and suddenly shuts off, like vMotion used to? You know, if you scan the vMotion port on an ESX server at one time, this was fixed recently, vMotion would no longer work. vMotion becomes a serious, a critical component of just about every infrastructure I know, mm-hmm. or every environment for saving after-hour work.
Right.
Or just for contention balancing, DRS, and dynamic resource load balancing of that type. And you turn off a critical component because of a scan, well, you're definitely not going to want to do that inside your environment, your real environment. In a test environment, absolutely.
I agree. You know, my objective with this podcast is to just give people additional tools. And in the case of the Veeam world, you know, they may already have this capability with vPower, that they can maybe provision these other environments, take these additional extra steps to, you know, incrementally make the environment more capable and better for things like this. So that's really good stuff. I have a question, though, or I should say not really a question, but just kind of a lead for everyone else. You know, Edward and Tim both work for the Virtualization Security Roundtable podcast hosted on TalkShoe. Ed, Tim, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your podcast?
Okay, Ed, it's your podcast.
It's actually my podcast. Tim is a it's actually interesting. Tim's involvement is kind of unique in that he comes on whenever he can by himself, but actually quite a few times when he's off teaching a security class specifically on virtualization, the whole class will join in on the podcast when they're timed up right. And
sure.
It's actually pretty cool to have the whole class there.
Well,
But the podcast is generally looking at virtualization and cloud security issues across the board. It's hypervisor agnostic. Yes, we do talk a fair amount about VMware because they happen to be the largest selling hypervisor out there. But we're across everything that's related to virtualization and cloud.
I like your podcast. I do listen to it. I subscribe to it on my phone. Because, you know, especially when I was just, you know, the administrator, the end user, you know, every now and then you would find a nugget of information that, you know, that's an easy fix, you know, to, you know, just imagine Ed is standing behind you, you know, as you're configuring a server. And then if you have that fear behind you, you can do little things to make it better. So that's the way I like to look at it. Hey, so Ed or Tim, I have three questions, you know, kind of the gimmick of the podcast. I'm curious, who wants to take them? Ed might already know what they are.
Tim.
He's the savant, so.
Oh, okay, all right.
Which type of savant is that?
That's the good one.
The good one, nice.
Well, I know what, we'll alternate. Tim first.
Well, no, that means you both get them, so. All right, so I'll start with Tim. Hey, Tim, in your professional work experience, looking into the past, you know, not right now, but any time before, what was the most interesting area of technology or story that you can share with us about something you've done technology-wise in your past?
Virtualization or not virtualization?
Technology. I don't know, working on cars, phones, whatever.
You know, when I was little, I was always taken aback by my dad. He'd always pull me by the back of the shirt and say, "Don't you take that stuff apart." I'd go over to people's house, and I had the back of their TV off, and their VCR taken apart. That didn't mean I didn't necessarily put it back together, but I'd have it all pulled all apart. And he'd be there cussing, trying to put it all back. "I told you not to take this apart." I was the type of person who was just curious. I wanted to see how things work. You know, I used to tell Ed all the time, you know, "Don't you know that?" He would tell me, "Don't you know that?" I said, "Ed, I know how to break things. I don't know how to fix things necessarily." So I think my biggest piece of the technology that I find most fascinating is when things hiccup, as I say, when things break, or where their breaking point is.
No, that's cool. That's a pretty cool story. I can relate a little bit to that. Maybe not as dramatic, but good way of telling it. Hey, Ed, now for you, what do you have going on, you know, in your past, or what have you had going on in your past that was the most interesting, or kind of a, I don't want to say a fishtail or good story about technology in general in your past that you can share?
Several things, but it actually all goes back to my love of technology actually all goes back to when I was a little kid. I mean, really little.
Mm-hmm.
I have a vivid imagination that probably helps in this particular, and I actually keep people up at night, I think.
And you still do.
Specifically Tim and a few others. But actually all goes back to is, you know, it wasn't my first programming thing, which was 1,000 lines in a day, but, you know, lost a friend over that one. No, it was actually before that. I was even younger. I would play around with whatever I found in the yard as if it was this big engine. And always try to make it better, you know, gears and yep, levers and rocks. I mean, they all became part of
it. Up.
Yeah, I'd soup up a tree stump to make it this huge engine. I've always been intrigued by technology from that aspect. I mean, that's why I do what I do.
Cool. So
from a technological perspective, though, I mean, that's way back then. But why I'm on doing what I do now is that I did a bunch of programming a long time ago, and I had to write that program across 30 different systems. I always wanted one system that just did everything.
Now you probably don't want that, though, do you?
Oh, actually, now I'm approaching what I have. I have just one system. It runs multiple operating systems, and I'm happy with that.
Okay.
Now, this was many, many years, many, many, many moons ago before virtualization was a gleam in anybody's eye.
Right.
Except IBM, but we don't talk about that.
So, Tim, what's going on in your current technology practice right now that you're most interested in?
Well, I have a new technology that I'm developing with another good friend of mine that is going to pretty much revolutionize the way that we deliver classes. It's called Flexible Presenter. It's basically going to give you the capability to take a class anywhere, anytime, and see the person that's sitting right next to you, and that person could be right there on the other side of the world. I've shown it to Ed, and all of this stuff is going to run in the cloud. So the part about security, where most of the time the U.S. government has this directive called the 8570 directive, and they're not getting a lot of traction on it because their people don't have a place to practice. They don't have a playground. And so consequently, they would, you know, go to their go to Uncle Sam and say, we're going to put this malware in your environment. He says, I don't think so. Go back home to your wife and say, we're going to build this thing. Oh, we got diapers to buy. We're not building this thing. Well, then it basically remains, I guess, for lack of a better word, unplayed with. You know, they don't have a chance to play with the tools. They don't have a chance to really get good with the tools. And the only way that you're going to catch a hacker is to be as good as a hacker and know the tools that they are using. So I've developed an environment that you could basically RDP into, and you could use all of those tools without ever having a fear of having touching your physical environment. It never sneaks back to you. And it has basically step-through labs. It has video-based instruction. It has testing. It's really pretty cool.
That's cool because, yeah, that's the hardest thing. And not just security, but even just learning how to, you know, provision infrastructure. You don't know what mass changes on your storage array are going to do unless you do it, right? You know?
Exactly.
Cool. So, Ed, what's going on right now that you're most interested in your technology practice, virtualization or not?
That's a tough one. I'm actually have my fingers in so many different pies. The most interesting thing I'm working on is actually trying to translate the current thinking about virtualization security and cloud security into an organizable, recognizable stack with a list of all the threats and protections you can put into place. So taking what's in my book, adding all the new stuff since that book was published and putting it together as a something people can use to go further and understand what's going on, more education.
Sure, sure.
How to fix the problems, not just, hey, here they are.
Right,
you know,
right.
Say, no, here's
the... I think he fixes it.
Tim goes, here they are, and I go, here's how you fix them.
Yeah.
no, actually... Tim's class is all about fixing them too, but this one's the approach is a more architectural level.
What are you doing there, Tim? Was that your dog? Okay, sorry. We've got video on this call, guys. Just didn't I didn't know what was going on, but it is his dog. Okay.
Now, Tim, I don't have video from you. You're frozen.
Looking into the future, what are you most excited for technology-wise? What do you see coming that you know you really think you're going to latch onto in the future?
I'd say the cloud. I mean, being able to use the cloud with my Flexible Presenter product. I think that's going to be the big thing where I don't have to worry about security. If somebody breaks in, okay, well, big deal. Just reboot the thing and start again. You know, it's not going to be that big a deal to me. Whereas in businesses, if you break into the cloud, that could be critical data. I'm just basically using test and scenario data to use the cloud. So I think that's a perfect way of introducing the cloud to people.
Okay, so Edward, what do you see looking into the future, technology in general, most exciting, most interesting, you know, in your view?
Cloud forensics.
Hmm.
In dealing with the virtual environment as part of the cloud, you know, you multiple layers of the cloud, where do you put, what do you do to do forensics? The techniques that are out there right now are actually overlooking some serious capability with inside the virtual environment. And, I mean, by serious, it's more, hey, that would make my life as a digital forensics engineer or scientist a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm. And you now can save a memory footprint of the server when you shut it down. We can wrap the switch to shut it down and save a snapshot of the memory footprint. Because basically what happens when you come in and your servers are acting all squirrely, what are you going to do? Well, let's go take a look at our log files. No, you're going to reboot this stupid thing.
Yeah.
You just lost all of your evidence.
Right. Well, then the next thing is compute log, right? You know, we've got disk. We've got memory. What's next? We have network.
You can get compute log now.
Really? Cool.
You can actually get the compute log. You can get the memory. You can get the disk. And you can get I.O. without anybody inside that VM knowing you're doing it.
Underneath the platform. And then how do you protect that? Because, you know, if you're running a cloud, that's somebody else's data. Does the cloud provider have rights to it? You know, there's a lot of questions around that.
What's really interesting is that whatever you can do in forensics, a hacker or an attacker can do as well, but from a destructive or data gathering approach as well.
Sure.
So from a forensics perspective, doing forensics analysis and research into it in the virtual environment, the cloud, that's really very interesting to me because I think it's such a new space.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about volumes of data that most law enforcement, there's a few that do, but most law enforcement will not be touching anytime soon. They want to reduce that amount down, so it's a manageable bundle. But if you're dealing with petabytes of data, and I mean, I just heard of an exabyte tape library, so there could be exabytes of data out there soon. Forensics on that becomes extremely painful. So GRC is going to be a very important approach to doing forensics. How much auditability? How much logging? What's missing? How do we change it?
Right.
How do we do secure deletes? How do we do secure writes? These are the issues that, to me, are very important. And they're the exciting thing because no one's really done it yet.
Wow.
But they're getting there.
Wow, that's awesome. I could... I'm not really the person to go, you know, be a thought leader in that, but I definitely have interest in it because there's a huge opportunity for all that stuff. And no, those are great responses, guys. Well, hey, we're going to wrap up the podcast here. If anybody, any of the listeners have any questions about the podcast, comments, observations, you can send an email to podcast@veeam.com. And Tim, Ed, hey, guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome, guys. Cheers.